Stinker was at peace. Gripping Gwyneth's hand even tighter, Stinker waited for the all-encompassing darkness to envelop them both.
It might even be relaxing,
thought Stinker. Maybe he'd finally take that long-awaited vacation everyone's been begging him to take.
I just worked too damn hard doing nothing.
But instead of darkness, there only came more sunshine. And Stinker felt life.
Looks like that much-needed rest just might have to wait till I do a whole lot more nothing.
Stinker grinned and mentally hugged himself. He couldn't help himself. He was adorable, and the self-hug felt good. In the meantime, Miss Becky landed with a gentle thud on a hard surface.
What in the devil ham creation?
Asked Stinker, mostly to himself. But if anyone else heard what he had just said, then that was okay, too. He had made it up, and he was proud.
Are we in heaven?
Asked Gwyneth.
We ain't in hell.
But where exactly were we?
Buck?
Asked Buck from the back seat. He had just woken up, breath reeking of razzleberry wine.
Pussy?
Carefully, Stinker looked out his driver's side window. The car looked to have landed on steel.
Could it possibly be?
Yes, it most definitely could be.
Stinker had landed on top of Boner's truck.
Are we alive?
Asked Gwyneth. Her eyes were still tightly closed.
More than alive. Not dead, girl.
Not dead. Oh, thank God.
Just thank me. I told you that angle was correct. Not even close.
Gwyneth opened her eyes. She shot Stinker a look that might as well have said,
You are truly something, but I loved you anyway. I cannot help myself. No woman possibly could, even if you aren't in good shape and have a visible vasectomy scar.
Carefully, ever so carefully, Stinker stepped out of his car. He had stuck the landing. No surprise. Stinker yelled down to Boner,
Not bad, huh?
Boner yelled back,
Couldn't leave you hanging, Hoss. I took the long way around and then backed straight into the creek. Shortened your distance. Unlike you, I do reverse.
How are you, buddy?
Just a few cans of suds,
responded Boner, already drinking one down to celebrate. Down in the truck's cab, Boner turned to Jumbo, who had spilled half the crawdaddy pizza onto his loamy, burbling lap.
Oh, come on. Did it and a cup of tea. Wait, oh, it slipped again. Ah, now it's all over my pants. Everything's a hot cheese.
Boner started to laugh. And Jumbo soon joined in. Above, Stinker also began to laugh. And then Gwyneth as well. The mirth was infectious. Buck, too, laughed, but for a far different reason. No one knew why.
What are you doing for the rest of your life?
Asked Stinker, winking. Gwyneth tried to return the wink, but found that she couldn't. She had a shard of glass in her left eye. It was excruciating. The gang was back together, and it felt wonderful. Chapter 20, Where That Fat Old Sun Ne'er Do Rise. Stinker and Gwyneth and Buck crossed into South Carolina, still on top of Boner's truck. They were receiving some funny looks, mostly from the female variety. There were thumbs up from foxy teen hitchers with hand-scrawled signs written in eyebrow pencil, and there were thumbs ups and okay signs and victory signs and finger shots and enthusiastic stick-it-to-ems, and even one exceedingly elderly man, he looked to be at least 90, who gave them the moon. They could have done without seeing that, even beyond the colostomy bag. Stinger was eased way back into his seat, all casual-like, enjoying the last of the day's golden rays. Baby panda leather cowboy boots up on Miss Becky's fleshy dash. Miss Becky didn't seem to mind. It was a damn good thing to have ended up on the top of Boner's truck. Miss Becky was out of gas, and they were now only loaded with sailboat fuel, running on empty. Soon, though, they'd be pulling into docks for a quick filler-up, and then they'd be on their way to Chocolate City to meet Mr. Numero Uno. Stinker would get back to driving a trans that was all full of spunk and funk. The entire gang would arrive with plenty of time to spare, and just enough time to tear it up. Yup. Everything was coming up camellias.
Easy as a dollop of vanilla on a steaming slice of Ma's pie.
The truck pulled into Doc's backwoods filling station just as the strong southern sun was setting. The colors reminded Boner of those found on the good old Reb flag. Also a thigh bruise that never quite healed. But it wasn't until Doc had taken Miss Becky down by crane and everyone was gathered round the Moonshine Refreshment Distillery for a little late afternoon nightcap that Buck pointed to the open doors at the rear of the truck and then ran back to where Stinker was sipping his shine. The kid was a hootin' and a hollerin'.
"Fuck!"
Buck said, pointing.
"Fuck, Buck! Fuck!"
There was just something about the way that Buck had screamed that last fuck that sent chills down Stinker's manly spine. This was a different sort of fuck than Stinker was used to from this Appalachian imbecile. This one foretold of great danger. This was one disturbing fuck.
"What's matter, boy?"
asked Stinker, approaching warily.
"Lost what's left of your square marbles?"
Boner was standing open-mouthed before the empty trailer.
"Stinker, believe it or not, the idiot child's got a point. There's something you need to see, or not see."
"What's the matter, Bones?"
asked Stinker, using Boner's nickname. Very few people ever used this nickname besides Stinker. And that 15-year-old bagger at Piggly Wiggly's back in Arkansas with the very small hips and the very hairy nips, but that was about it. Boner spurted,
"Your chimp done gone and escaped!"
"She what?"
yelled Stinker, peering inside. Nothing. Just circus chains and a large steaming mound of jungle pooty.
"Where in the hell did she go? God damn it, son, can't you carry nothing across state lines without losing it?"
"Now, just a kitty-pucking minute. Ease on down the road, boy, or your mustache gonna end up on the back of your head."
"Relax!"
exclaimed Gwyneth.
"Relax, Stink! Relax, Bones!"
This was her first time using Boner and Stinker's nicknames, and it felt right.
"What is important here is not who is at fault, but where we might be able to find poor Rascal."
She still hated using contractions.
"Woman's got a point,"
said Stinker, suddenly looking cordite.
"Let's focus our attention on finding the old girl."
He paused.
"Damn it to hell's back acre, and just when we were making record time, too."
"Ooh, worms in a peach basket,"
continued Jumbo. For once, the jiggly-giggly fat man wasn't laughing or even trying to entertain. He looked to be genuinely concerned about the disappearance of this not-so-friendly chimp. Jumbo's edible food stains had now spread down to his white socks. He smelled terribly of sadness and public disgrace. Stinker was beginning to regret ever having invited this swollen piece of garbage along for the ride. All three stood before the back of the empty truck. Now what? Things couldn't get worse. But they did. And fast. From out of the bushes surrounding Boner's truck stepped forth a little man in petite boots and a miniature cowboy hat. Stinker let loose with one of his signature high-pitched giggles.
"Well, I mean, it's the midget ankle-biter with a regular-sized attitude."
"The knee-high shit-kicker, that's what you called me,"
replied the little man, pulling out a regular-sized gun.
"So bite on this!"
"Oh!"
The little man pointed his pistol directly at Stinker. His little forefinger went to pull the trigger. Gwyneth screamed. Her previous life had never allowed for midgets in tiny cowboy costumes using regular-sized guns. Her high-class urbane world had never known of such real-world circumstances. In a way, she was a road virgin, and her road cherry was now being popped. It hurt. Stinker again prepared himself for his maker. He was getting good at this, and he once again found himself at peace. He still had speckles of glass and a thin strand of bubblegum deeply entrenched in his dense stash. He was ready. But if the good trucker living in the big clouds above couldn't accept him just as he was, complete with a match head embedded in his secondary sex characteristics, well, then maybe the good trucker shouldn't accept him at all.
Take me, Lord. Just provide me with enough cold beer for the long and lonely nights. That's all I ask. Is that too much?
Stinker grinned. He couldn't help himself. He dug, bending the ear of the man upstairs. Stinker then tensed for the bullet, which never arrived. Instead, Stinker heard a horrible, high-pitched yelp. Opening his eyes, Stinker saw that the little man was being attacked by none other than Rascal, who had returned. It was so clear now. When Rascal had escaped earlier from the truck, she had proceeded to get into many unbelievable adventures, only to return when she was needed most. If Rascal talked, she would have told Stinker all about these phenomenal adventures. But she couldn't, which was good. Like most females, she probably never would have shut the hell up. Chapter 21, Rascal's Adventures. Some of those adventures included Rascal meeting a blind woman who had allowed the chimp a long lick of her ice cream cone, thinking that Rascal was a handsome man with very bad breath who had just asked for her hand in marriage. The woman had wept and said yes. Rascal climbing aboard a hot air balloon and waving to the children below, and the children seeking shelter as Rascal went wee-wee. Rascal riding through the streets of a small-town military parade, wearing medals, and taking full credit for the victory at the Battle of Normandy. Rascal murdering a red-haired drifter by the name of Seahorse. No particular reason. In short, Rascal was having the time of her chimp life. But she could still sense something amiss.
It is in the air. I can smell it. Trouble.
And Rascal knew that she just had to help. True, this distempered creature fallen from God's heavenly kingdom was in serious sexual heat, and she desperately wanted, no, needed, to rut with a male chimp, and it didn't matter what he looked like. But this could wait. Stinker meant the world to her, and he needed her protection. Rascal knew this instinctively, way down deep in her primal soul. What goes through the mind of a wild chimp? Maybe it was just as simple as saving your best pal from a midget with a gun. So Rascal had waved to her fans, jumped from the balloon, breaking her fall on an already injured and now dead World War II veteran, and then made her way, with her incredible sense of scent, and a ride with a driver who had very little choice, to this illegal backwoods distillery deep in the South Carolina woods. And the feral chimp girl had arrived just in time. Just. Chapter 22, Just in Time. And here Rascal was now, doing her thing. Stinker sat on a log. He knew very well what was about to happen, and he wanted a good seat for it. It was sure to be one hell of a show.
Damn chimp loves me. Just like every female out there, human or not.
Boner, Gwyneth, Jumbo, and Buck soon joined Stinker, taking seats on adjacent logs.
Oh, I do love me some fighting,
said Boner, all highfalutin', as if he was some sort of gay sports writer at an expensive, slick New York liberal weekly.
Oh, I do, I really do.
Everyone laughed. Even Doc, that ill-tempered piece of Dixie carcinogenic gristle, took one arthritic knee to the muddy patch to watch. This was what was called good old backwoods entertainment.
Putting the whammy on Sammy.
Stinker only wished that he had himself some buttered porn theater popcorn to go with all the fun.
What goes through the mind of a wild chimp? Who the hell knows? Then again, who the hell cares? Kill him, girl. Just kill the tiny freak.
The fight began. Chapter 23, Almost There. The fight was over. It hadn't lasted long. It had started slow, but then increased in ferocity as Rascal found her sea legs. The sheriff and the tiny man had stood zero chance. By the end, Boner had thrown in the towel, pretending to be a crusty boxing corner man who had devoted his life to a love of stupendous and unnecessary violence both inside and outside the ring. The towel was a stained jockstrap.
You a tomato!
Boner screamed.
And you're too weak to fight a cold!
Everyone laughed. It was too funny. After the fight was mercifully over, Doc had scooped up both the sheriff and his freakish son, both barely alive, and placed them onto the bed of his Chevy pickup's cab. He drove them straight off his property and arrived 20 minutes later by the side of a back road. He wrapped the tiny man head to toe in a plaster cast just as his daddy was already wrapped, and then propped both unceremoniously by the side of the road. Best of luck to him. It was now an hour later. Jumbo was riding shotgun in Miss Becky. The front windshield was still blown out, allowing for the cool, refreshing southern air to filter in. Rascal was safely chained into the back of Boner's truck, daydreaming about all her adventures. And yet she still seemed antsy. Perhaps she shouldn't have torn out the heart of that elderly World War II hero. Buck was the front passenger in Boner's truck. Boner was attempting to teach the kid some manners and wasn't having an easy time of it.
Buck!
Said Buck.
Love. Say love, boy.
Buck!
Love. It's all about love, brother. A long-haired trucker spoke about love hundreds of years ago. His name was Jesus. He didn't drive no truck, but he should have driven one. He was a real good man. And if he was still around, he'd wrap you up in his big old biblical shawl and hug you forever and ever and ever. And it'd be the best feeling in the entire world.
Boner paused.
Well, the second best. After getting drunk.
Shit!
Boner rolled his eyes.
This mountain tard was impossible.
Within the cozy confines of Miss Becky, things were going much better. Jumbo was doing his best imitation of a drunk whale. No one knew why. But no one was arguing.
Now how did I get this dark ring of chocolate round my blowhole?
Jumbo asked, sounding for all the world exactly like an obese ocean critter. Stinker and Gwyneth were laughing so hard tears were coming out of their eyes. It was a riot. But Jumbo wasn't finished. He was just getting started.
I'm just a big old fat whale who'd like to go toot, 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 yee, me hungry.
Stinger was screaming with laughter, and Gwyneth was rocking back and forth in shoulder-shaking hysterics. This was the most uproarious thing they had ever witnessed. They were having the time of their lives. A truck passed on their left. The driver, a bearded road brother with an American flag bandana, waved. Stinker knew this shaggy, long-hauling fool from previous wanderings and was only too happy to see him again. 'Twas Jackass Johnny. Or Silverweed. Or Elegant Bob. No, Nasty Sam. Willie the Wall-Eyed? Yes, definitely Nasty Sam. One of them. Whoever he was, Stinker would see him again down the road soon enough. amazing adventures were never in short supply. Within 5 hours, plus or minus a few, Stinker would be handing off a nicely chilled six-pack of Schlitz to the President of the United States. He was almost there. Stinker flicked on his Panasonic RH-68 track player to take in some down-home country tunage. A song blared out, smoky, spicy, and murky loud. It was the tune about Stinker. Whether they're low or way, way up. Stinker, that brawny, brave redneck, just won't ever give up. That powerful, powerful old man, strong as he may. The last word was off-putting, as it didn't quite rhyme with what came before. The melody was discordant. It wasn't a great song, or even average, or even true, as it still didn't make much sense. But Stinker was okay with it. He always was. He turned it up even louder. Chapter 24, Caravan. Stinker wasn't sure how the word had started to spread, but it had. Must have been Nasty Sam, or Jackass Johnny, or the Cocaine Kid, or Elegant Bob. No, definitely Nasty Sam. Now there was a man who acted like a woman when it came to CB gossip. The crowds had started small, but as Stinker and the gang cruised their way north, the throngs had grown larger and larger. In Roland, North Carolina, just across the state line, Stinker drove beneath a bridge that had been decorated with flowers and handwritten signs. One sign looked to have been written by an elementary school group. We Heart Stinker. The R was backwards, signifying a deep, innocent love. But if the class had been just 1 year older, it would have been evidence of a profound stupidity. For a guy who was kicked out of elementary school for having backseat sex with a teacher in her mid-50s, Stinker was doing A-okay for himself. The mass of media had started to arrive just south of Fayetteville, with trucks, satellites, and earnest-looking college-educated reporters impotently holding up their expensive mics as Stinker drove past. Stinker had no time for the government-run FCC. Instead, he picked up his CB mic and went straight to Channel 69.
Nasty Sam, Nasty Sam, I'm talking to you now. Are you the one responsible for all this Stinker love?
There was at first static, and then a curt reply.
Come back, Miss Here the Nasty Man. Let's say I did, now what?
Stinker smiled. In truth, he didn't mind becoming a celebrity. The country desperately needed someone to look up to in these dark, recession-drenched times. Why not him?
Not mad at you, Nasty,
said Stinker into the gold-plated CB handset.
Just asking. How you find out where I was headed?
Yeah, huckleberry named Doc. Just enjoy the attention, son. All the way up to that goddamn swamp they call Washington.
That's a 10-4, good buddy. Mercy sakes. Banana on the upswing, banging and slanging. Crinkle and wrinkle. Slapping crap. Stinking big.
Often Stinker liked to make up his own CB slang, and this was one of those times. Stinker turned to Gwyneth.
Ever think you'd be road famous?
He asked. Gwyneth had to admit that she hadn't. A long time ago, as just a child and then as a teen, she had pictured herself as a world-famous math expert, married with 2 children, living the typical northeastern suburban boring dream. Had she ever envisioned delivering a six-pack of Schlitz to the President of the United States in a leased convertible Trans Am, joined by a near-mute holler hillbilly, an unhinged chimp, an amusing but smelly southern fat man, and a trucker with an orgiastic sleeper cab who went by his God-given Christian name of Boner?
Never.
Jumbo was screaming,
"The Dallas Cowboy cheerleader!
The Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders!
At first, Stinker thought the thick clown was hallucinating from one too many chocolate enemas, as was his habit. But not this time. Stinker could now see the beautiful ladies, all in a row, as the trans breezed past. The cheerleaders, kicking their tasty legs and shaking their navy, silver, and white pom-poms. The Dallas Cowboys were America's team, and the team's cheerleaders were America's lovelies. What they were doing in South Carolina, by the side of the road, was a bit of mystery, but Stinker wasn't complaining. As Miss Becky headed north, the crowds grew more and more dense. When the car reached the North Carolina and Virginia border, the crowds exploded to 8 deep. By Richmond, 15. By Charlottesville, 20 people stood behind every 30 who were already standing behind every 40 alongside the road. The nation had never seen anything like this.
Ever.
Few more hours, said Stinker out loud. And our mission will be finito.
It was the one word a Mexican he knew.
Not so fast, said Gwyneth, pointing to a huge neon sign above the road.
Stinker groaned.
Oh.
It read, Big Red Circus in 3 miles.
You told me earlier that you stole Rascal from a circus,
said Gwyneth coquettishly.
Might it be this one?
Well, I don't remember.
Sure you do. This here is the circus, and if you found Rascal at this circus, perhaps we could also find her a mate.
Don't got the time, little lady. I know what you're thinking, baby, but we just don't got the time. Too close!
Oh, we always have the time. For love.
Stinker pointed to the back, where Jumbo was now asleep, his head on a 6-pack pillow. Jumbo was snoring. In his sleep, he was mumbling about fast food restaurants, using very specific names, almost as if he was earning money by doing so.
Every time I go to Arby's, sometimes I go to Hardee's, too.
With a pathetic air of male desperation, Stinker begged,
But girl, we still got that precious brew to hand off.
Gwyneth said nothing, just looked at Stinker.
Was she gonna cry? Actually gonna cry?
Stinker was done for. She started to cry.
God darn it!
Exclaimed Stinker, looking to the heavens above.
I'm talking money, woman! Good old American cabbage!
Maybe she's going through that change,
thought Stinker sadly.
When does that happen again?
He thought back on his first teacher crush and her horrible, violent mood swings. Like most aging females, the teacher had definitely went and gone round that molasses twist.
And I'm talking love,
countered Gwyneth between tears.
Only one thing that can tame that beast, and that's love! She is in deep heat!
Gwyneth was blubbering like a child. She had that look all women get when they become inflexible and impossible to deal with. Stinker had seen it before, many times, and he knew it was useless to ever attempt to fight it. Stinker sighed.
Ooh.
Another battle lost.
1 hour, that's all. If she don't find a chimp man in that time, we head out regardless.
Promise?
Promise.
Thank you, promise?
Chirped Gwyneth. Her voice was adorably high-pitched, like a vulnerable newborn's.
Oh, come on now. You know Stinker never, ever...
Stinker will, or Gwyneth won't, if you know what Gwyneth means.
Stinker knew. With his hand extended, Stinker promised.
Are you missing a pinky?
Gwyneth asked, shocked and a bit frightened. Stinker blushed, then took the next exit. Chapter 25, Taking Off. Somewhere between Georgia and Washington, D.C., Clarence McLeod sat on his leather throne within his office on the top floor of the tallest building south of the Mason-Dixon, or Macy-Dixie, as Clarence's niece impishly called it. She wasn't bright. Clarence was watching the latest satellite news coverage from around the country on his brand-new 85-inch black-and-white deep-set television. He had read about it in Popular Mechanics and knew immediately that he had to own it. It was the biggest in the world. Clarence adored it. All the news for the past few hours had been about Stinker. Even Walter Cronkite had gotten into the act, hosting a special Stinker report. Every network in the country, all three of them, carried a live feed of Miss Becky making her way up the coast. How much was he paying Orville again? $5,000? $7,000? A whole damn lot. And this was the result? Clarence pressed the large red button on his desk. And then a woman's sexy, blonde-infused voice.
Yes?
Honey, it's Clarence. Get in here, please.
Yes, Mr. Clarence.
Replied the sun-dappled voice.
Right away, sir.
In walked Betty.
New assignment?
Asked Betty, taking a seat. Clarence pointed to his large television.
I've been watching the news, darling, and it's all about the Stinker.
Oh, yeah?
Said Betty. A smile came to her face. She remembered what it had been like to sleep with Stinker. Like a broken carnival ride with no end.
Oh, yeah,
said Clarence in a mocking tone.
See, I had more faith in Orville's ability.
Me too,
said Betty, half listening.
Have we talked recently with our good friend Orville?
Betty shook her head.
Get in touch. Anyhow, anywhere. And raise the price to $60,000.
$60,000?
She could barely get it out.
Do you think that's a good idea, Mr. Clarence?
Hell if I know. Orville's probably suffering from yellow fever flashbacks, running through the woods screaming about Charlie and sleeping with imaginary gaze.
He paused.
Which is acceptable. Heroic even. But I cannot allow Stinker to reach the president and hand him Schlitz beer. And I'm running out of options here.
Clarence couldn't believe what he was about to say, but he said it anyway.
Let's go with $75,000.
That's a tremendous a lot.
Clarence took off the television remote and aimed it at Betty. He clicked the off button. It seemed to work. Betty turned and exited the office. Chapter 26. It's on. The gang stood before the Indian owner of the Big Red Circus. The primitive's name was Big Red. Gwyneth didn't think Big Red looked all that much like an Indian. To Gwyneth, Big Red looked Caucasian, perhaps even Canadian. But she wasn't about to ask questions. Not when standing in front of someone so important and wise.
Now, Big Red,
Stinker was saying, sucking on a piece of straw he had found over at the petting zoo area.
I'm not sure you know my history, but I do have a name.
Big Red aware,
said Big Red.
Man who drive in crazy way, go by Stinker.
Stinker spit out the piece of straw he was chewing. It tasted very bad.
First of all, I do want to apologize for taking Rascal a few months back,
announced Stinker, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand.
But she's proved to be a most loyal friend.
That's so,
asked Big Red. Everything the Indian uttered was sacred.
But as you know from being around jungle creatures your entire life in the woods, even chimps need to find love.
Stinker was nauseated. Would this taste ever leave his mouth? He didn't think so.
That's so?
That's so. I returned so I could find Rascal a most suitable partner of the chimp variety.
Big Red understand.
Like most Indians, this fellow wasn't the chatty type. Stinker knew this from watching a lot of television.
Big Red is on a real Geronimo trip.
Under one condition.
One condition?
Asked Stinker, growing concerned. He thought this would be a cakewalk. But with Indians, everything was always a mystery. Did they even like cake?
That you win dirt road race against Bongo.
said Big Red, adjusting his tremendously large Indian headdress, which seemed to be slipping a tad. It didn't appear to fit or contain real feathers. It also had a chin strap.
Who in the hell is Bongo?
Asked Stinker, now spitting out a petting zoo feeding pellet and gagging.
That Bongo.
Everyone looked over to a man. Was it even a man? Standing about 15 yards away. They all turned at exactly the same time, which was very funny. Then everyone took a step back, as if in shock, also at exactly the same time, which was twice as funny.
Lord have mercy.
That Bongo?
Asked Stinker, weakly.
That Bongo.
Bongo said nothing. He stood at least 6 feet tall. He was very muscular. He was not wearing a shirt. His arms were huge, as was his stomach. Across his left cheek was a ragged scar. He was bald. He barely looked human. Was there a meaner man in the world?
If you lose,
said Big Red, emphasizing his words with his multicolored plastic tomahawk.
You lose, rascal. Rascal never find mate for loving.
Jumbo stepped forward.
Now that's not fair.
Boner held him back, which wasn't easy.
Easy, fat man.
I'm fine, Bones,
said Jumbo, calming down.
But if I do win, then what?
Big Red stretched his arms out wide to conjure the entire universe. Indians had been using this gesture for literally decades. This move was used to signify something very old and very much of this precious earth. Big Red again adjusted his chin-strapped headdress.
Then rascal all yours, and rascal then find lover.
Stinker looked back over to Bongo, who only sneered.
Well, that is one mean old rattlesnake.
There wasn't much to do, except to say no to Big Red, and for all of them to be on their way. Rascal would have to find help somewhere else. Hey, he did what he could, right?
But that was too easy.
You're on.
Big Red gasped. Stinker slipped on his pair of special monogrammed slot machine gloves that he used whenever racing or making outdoorsy love. No one knew why. Regardless, they were magnificent, what with their anti-slip, pimpled rubber grip.
Let's race.
Yeah, come on now! Woo!
Jumbo cheered and made homoerotic motions to Bongo, who looked confused. Boner now launched into his hilarious sports announcer's voice.
What we have here, ladies and gentlemen, is only the finest matchup in the history of car racing. Oh, I do say this is going to be a classic.
Then Boner, knowing full well he was earning laughs, slipped seamlessly into his Howard Coe smell imitation.
What an invigorating, revitalizing situation,
said Boner. He sounded Semitic, with all of the mysterious and dark forces that came associated with that tribe.
This situation is impressive. This situation is staggering.
Boner stopped. Those were the only long words he knew. Maybe later. Buck, who was sitting on the ground banging sticks, exclaimed,
Piss!
Even the Indian had to laugh at this one.
Piss!
This ancient warrior mumbled, breaking into a wide grin, chopping in a downward motion toward his groin with his plastic hawk.
Piss!
The race was on. Chapter 27, Doubling Down.
Affirmative,
said Orville, hanging up the public payphone. $75,000. Incredible. That's what the old man's half-wit secretary had said. Orville had never touched so much money at once, had never even heard about so much money at once. Time to double down. Orville Max III hadn't given up. He wasn't a type of bungle nut to suffer from a nasty case of defeatism. Far from it. If anything, this straight-laced former military man who still believed in the goodness that a barely democratic government could potentially bring to the world's oriental peoples had only increased the intensity of his mission, kicked it into a new, ferocious gear.
Semper Gumby, always flexible.
Orville jumped into his Cadillac and turned the volume up. A fat broad was singing in a European language about the thin and weak. He loved it. Before long, Orville was cruising at top speed down the back roads of this magnificent nation, avoiding any and all major thoroughfares. According to the radio, the main roads were all clogged with Stinker's fans. Orville didn't own or use a CB. That was for the lower class. Morons, stupids, fools, academics who created their own sand art, lesbians in pant cuffs who believed in the power of toe socks and Indiana yoga, a van full of unusuals, civvy fartlickers who owned creek rocks as household pets. 3 more hours to Washington. Orville wondered if his former home had changed in the years since he had been helicoptered out at the last minute with the Great One before the angry mobs had charged. Orville was about to enter his old city and wait, and then pounce on Stinker. Orville leaned back, driving with one hand, and thought about intergalactic medical experiments. Chapter 28, Toil and Trouble. The race was over. Or almost. Stinker had it locked. Or nearly. The stadium was filled with hundreds of thousands of onlookers, all cheering wildly for their dirt-covered redneck rapscallion, Stinker. There were a few fans rooting for Bongo, maybe 10,000, but not as enthusiastically. Buck was by Stinker's side. He was wearing his old-fashioned motoring goggles and a funny safety helmet over his coonskin cap, but no seatbelt. Stinker liked to call the helmet a brain bucket, but with the way he drove, the kid didn't need no seatbelt. 198 laps, with only 2 to go.
What a race!
Stinker couldn't wait to hand over to Rascal a ripe chimp of the male variety. Maybe that would finally soothe the old girl's savage Amazonian needs. She was too hungry, too thirsty. The primal force of Rascal's lust annoyed Stinker. Just gotta stick that burning spear into a bucket of cooling water. Watch it sizzle. Maybe even take some Polaroids. Later use the photos as sheet music for his skin flute. He'd see. Stinker was now driving with his knees, touching up his hair in the rear view. The car was as close to driverless as an automobile would ever get. Stinker took the final turn on 198, grooming his eyebrows. He wanted to look exceptional when he stood on that trophy stand, accepting the fancy plaque that would read, Number One American Winner. Stinker's trailer was already packed with trophies and plaques, and even a few stolen deflated Mylar balloons reading Feliz Quinceañera. Also a framed $100 check for having won the 1971 National Strutting Championship. Quite a few pickled genitals, too, and rare glossy professional stripper photos. Framed. But there was always room for one more award. His Meemaw had once told him this, just before she fell dead of a heart attack while taking a breathalyzer test in the seashell parking lot of a Lexington, Kentucky sizzler. Bongo was way back at lap 196. This race, as the experts might have said, was in the wrinkled bag.
How you gonna celebrate?
Asked Stinker to Buck, who looked as if he was already celebrating with a bottle of fancy champagne. The kid was smacked. Stinker opened his window and floored the accelerator. The noise and smells of the spectators entered the car. Stinker stuck his gorgeous nose up as far as it would go in order to take it all in. He could live off of these fumes, morning, day, and night. Stinker screamed. And then screamed again. A loud, hollow sound, devoid entirely of life. There was only one thing on this here old earth Stinker was afraid of, and that was, believe it or not, bubbles. And Stinker was deathly afraid of them. To the point where he would cry if he ever saw a bubble. Stinker never cried. Except for that one time when his childhood dog was run over and killed by a car driven by an underage driver. The driver was Stinker. His middle-aged teacher lover was in the back, nude, clutching her bloody forehead. It was definitely a story. But here was just one lonely bubble somehow finding its way into the car, floating in from the outside, no doubt from a child's toy, or from the Playboy Bunny photo shoot taking place within the track's midway. The Playboy theme was Ring Them Southern Bells. One white playmate was bending over a plantation-era whipping post, pretending to be lessened. It was adorable.
Why, of all things, a bubble!
Stinker yelled, near tears, and Buck, now awake, could only laugh. The bubble was glistening with many colors, just like a rainbow, as innocent and harmless as you please. Even a child wouldn't have been scared of it. Not Stinker, though. A few years back, when Stinker was a younger man, one of his numerous roadside lovers had asked him about his fear of bubbles. Stinker hadn't answered. He was too ashamed. But the reason was simple. When Stinker was a baby, his mama had fallen into a vat of bubbles and nearly drowned. She was a long-haul trucker, having traveled more than 1 million miles in just 1 year back in 56, the first woman to have ever done so. But she was careless and liked her silly sauce too much. She found herself one long evening in a revolting juke joint on the far reaches of Jackson, Mississippi. A man named Lemonade had given her a bottle of his own home-brewed honky hooch. It was way too powerful, almost magical. Wandering through the power lines behind the bar, Stinker's mother fell into a cesspool full of bubble bath solution. An albino hermit by the name of Easy Squeezy found her and tried to save her life by reaching over with his prosthetic leg and pulling her out. It was a bad way to go. Mom's ashes now sat in a bedazzled cremation urn inside Stinker's trailer. The urn was an emptied Sanka can. Stinker shuddered just thinking about it. It was a common story, but it upset him just the same. And his father? Found dead after that clothing-optional prison root canal. Stinker blew at the bubble, which floated ever so delicately over to Buck's side. Now it was Buck's turn to blow the bubble, this time back over to Stinker. Buck found all this hysterical.
Fuck bubble, suck bubble.
The boy cried out in an idiotic sing-song voice.
Cock bubble, crack bubble.
Oh, ain't you having fun?
Thought Stinker, taking his eyes off the road, if only for a brief second. But it was too late. Stinker grabbed onto the wheel with both hands, and yet he was already in a spin, fishtailing back and forth on the dirt racetrack. Smoke was billowing from out of the motor. Something was clearly wrong. From over his left, Stinker could see Bongo pass. Bongo was now only one lap behind. Miss Becky came to a hard stop by the side of the track, facing backwards. The bubble rested ever so gracefully on the bristles of Stinker's mustache. And then it popped.
God damn bubbles! I hate bubbles!
Stinker put the hammer down by stepping real firm on Miss Becky's accelerator. Just like she liked it. Nothing. Stinker must have exploded a rod in the engine during that last nasty spin. He could fix it real fast if only he had the chance, but not now. Stinker slapped the stick into reverse, and then back into drive, and then slammed down the accelerator. Nothing. Reverse, and back into drive.
Accelerator.
Again, nothing.
There's only one thing to do,
thought Stinker.
But Stinker don't reverse. Stinker never reverses. Stinker never has, and never will. Ever.
Stinker looked straight ahead. Bongo was approaching quickly in his magged-up, super-chrome, dual-piped, four-on-the-floor 1971 Dodge Charger. One more lap, and he'd be the winner. Unacceptable. What should Stinker do?
Stinker, don't reverse! Ever!
He yelled, almost as if trying to convince himself with the volume of his own beautiful, haunting words. But then came a slow-motion image of Rascal running through a junkyard, hand-in-hand with her new chimp lover. Each was holding a rubber enema bulb in the shape of a heart. It was adorable. Strange, but adorable. That was all it took. Stinker waited for Bongo to get closer. Their eyes locked. Stinker noticed that there was a look of fear in Bongo's huge, moony peepers. Stinker goosed Miss Becky's hammer, still in reverse. Accelerator to the floor. She bucked backwards and stopped. Girl wasn't in the mood to groove. There was only one thing to do. Stinker stuck two fingers in his mouth and let out a whistle. Through the crowd, Rascal came galloping. She did not look happy. Within moments, Rascal caught up to Bongo's speeding auto and hopped easily through the driver's side window. What went on inside, no human should ever see, Stinker included, so he averted his eyes. Buck, meanwhile, saw blood and flesh and perhaps a flying elbow. He smiled. It was funny. Bongo slowed to a quick stop well before the finish line. Stinker let out another short whistle, and a tow truck arrived, hooked itself up to the front of Miss Becky. Miss Becky's front was a fine one, and towed it across the line. The spectators had never seen anything like this. Was such a thing even possible? Less than 10 years back, man had first landed on the moon. Seemed impossible then. But compared with this, the moon landing was no more impressive than an early morning powdered breast milk run to Cleveland. Stinker flashed the victory sign. The crowd went berserk. A Playboy bunny waved and flashed her luscious porn fritters. Stinker glanced over to Buck, who had already finished the victory champagne.
Little shit always was a hog,
thought Stinker and laughed. Buck vomited. Stinker would get some bubbly later. All in a day's work. Chapter 29, Handing Out Giggles. The gang stood around Boner's truck and watched the entire rig violently shake. Whatever was going on inside was loud and boisterous, angry, messy, against nature. Big Red the Indian had been true to his word, unlike most Indians. He had graciously presented Stinker with a trophy for his remarkable win, and then with a 23-year-old male chimp named Old Joe. This was very old for a chimp. Rascal's yellow eyes had flared when she first caught sight of Old Joe. Her privates grew red and inflamed, and then began to emit a musky odor that reminded Boner of a supper of Red Hots roasted with wire hangers over an indoor fire. To Jumbo, the odor was reminiscent of that fetid secret fold he had never told anyone about, stinking like a week-old slice of tater tot casserole. The new primate couple had retreated, more like exploded, into the back of the truck to begin their most primal dance. The truck's shimmying started slowly, but quickly grew faster and faster, until Stinker feared that the entire damn thing would tip over. And wouldn't that have been a shifty kick in the old leather shorts? The gang waited patiently for the monkey rutting to finish. Boner was afraid that old Joe, no spring chicken, wouldn't survive the encounter. Boner had noticed quite a lot of gray speckled around old Joe's mouth.
Hang in there, you old Romeo,
thought Boner, after one last grand shake. The truck came to a sudden lurch, and then all was silent and still.
Time to go,
announced Boner, wasting no time.
Agreed, Kimosabe,
replied Stinker, using his one Japanese phrase. He jumped into Miss Becky without opening the door. He had already fixed the broken rod. Actually, he had paid a Spanish to do it for him. Truth be told, he wasn't the best around engines. Stinker gave Big Red a fake tomahawk chop. Red grinned. This savage was unusually easy to please. Stinker looked over to Bongo, who grimaced, but then smiled, even though he was horribly disfigured and missing an elbow. Even this large galumph was taken with Stinker's natural charm and charisma. Or perhaps Bongo still suffered from that brain injury he experienced as a toddler at the hands of his 7-year-old aunt, Mindy. Stinker pulled out of the circus entrance and then onto the road leading north.
Breaker, breaker!
Stinker heard from his CB transmitter. It was Boner. Even though they had just spoken seconds before, it was vital to constantly communicate via the old citizen's band.
This here be the Stinker. Go on.
Son, it looks like you got yourself some fans. This highway is lying sweaty-ass deep, boy.
It was true. And then some. Seemingly millions of men, women, and children lined the 2-lane highway. This was no surprise. For it was now clear that it was Stinker that this country so desperately needed in these fantastically difficult times. In the past decade, the economy had become unglued. There had been wars, corruption, macrame, a granny glasses wearing freak with a figure skating haircut who sang about mountain mamas. Chaos.
Madness.
But then, here arrived this everyday, mildly out of shape hero named Stinker, who, without complaint, attempted to deliver urine-colored convenience store American-produced garbage beer to the President of the United States. In his previous evening's broadcast, Walter Cronkite had even used the term far out. That was a first. Far out indeed. By the side of the road, good old American commerce was being taken to the extreme. Stinker t-shirts, Stinker buttons, Stinker CB mic grips, Stinker-shaped sex toys. Stinker wondered if he'd ever see a dime from these earnings. Probably not. But this newfound fame could only help when it came to funding future amazing adventures. Anything could happen now. Soon enough, Stinker saw the inevitable. A male streaker with an exceedingly hairy pubic region running through the crowd, the 13 colony American flag draped over his narrow, furry shoulders. This was American patriotism at its best. A few miles away, Stinker saw a rock and roll band called the Shag Reflex. By the sounds of it, they weren't singing about Stinker at all, which was disappointing. From what Stinker could make out, the band was warbling about marijuana, which was all well and good, but Stinker still preferred alcohol and red pills brewed up by the good old doc.
Pure. Not god-awful hippie garbage grown in a backfield manured to the moon by a slippy-dippy stink. Why fly to heaven if you could hop there?
At another point, just south of Leesburg, Virginia, Morgana the Kissing Bandit had jiggled her way from out of the crowd and directly over to Miss Becky, where she leaned in and kissed Stinker smack dab on his sumptuous lips, which caused Gwyneth to become at first jealous, but then a little sad when she realized that kissing was Morgana's entire life. Was this any way to live? Stinker had one arm around Gwyneth's seat, enjoying the ride. Buck was busy in the back seat making spastic motions with his hands and filthy feet. Washington existed just before them. Nothing else stood in the way. To his left, Stinker saw a miserable man in a state